Welcome in to You're the Cure with Dr. Ben Edwards, MD. Check out VeritasMedical.com for archive shows and other important information to help you regain control of your health. You can find it all right there at VeritasMedical.com. Check it out today. You'll be glad you did. Let's say good morning once again to Dr. Ben Edwards, MD. Good morning, sir. How are you?
Good morning, Wade. Doing great. How are you?
I'm doing well. Hope you had a great weekend.
Yes, sir. Sure did. We're going to jump into this show today. You know, this is a topic I'd like to just move past, but it's in the news again because the CDC just approved this COVID injection for the childhood vaccine schedule. And so for the sake of these children, thought we need to address this one more time. And we have a guest today that's going to help me address this. And I was looking back, actually, because he's a repeat guest. Steve Kirsch was on our show October 26th of last year, almost to the day, coming back this time. And what impressed me back then, last year, and why I asked Steve Kirsch to come on the show was because he was a full-blown believer in the vaccine schedule, specifically COVID inoculation. He took those shots, and he suffered a side effect, but then he started noticing people around him suffering some side effects, and so he started looking into the data, and he started calling some folks, and he started getting some researchers involved, and you know, that led him, and to his credit, it led him down this road of discovery. And he started calling authorities, from CDC folks to politicians to you name it, and basically not getting a call back. So he started putting out wagers to the tune of $1 million, if you can dispute or prove what I'm saying is not accurate. So we've asked Steve to come back again because he's writing on Substack, and I encourage everyone to go to Substack if you're not familiar with that. You should get familiar with it. It's where a lot of truth gets written and not censored. And we'll get into Steve's Substack page here in a second. But I want to say, before we even jump into this topic, just to remind everyone, this is an emergency use authorized gene therapy injection. This lipid nanoparticle technology has never been successfully used. And I'm going to quote from the corporate prospectus released in 2018, prior to the stock market launch of Moderna. Remember, Moderna is a new company. And here's a quote from that corporate prospectus. Remember, 2018. Quote, no mRNA drug has been approved in this new potential category of medicines and may never be approved as a result of efforts by others or us. mRNA drug development has substantial clinical development and regulatory risk due to the novel and unprecedented nature of this new category of medicines. Remember, they've been working on this lipid nanoparticle delivery system for a little while for genetic diseases such as Crigler-Najjar syndrome, which is a rare syndrome, but these folks are actually missing a liver enzyme because of this enzyme breaks down bilirubin, but they're missing this gene. So if you could deliver that gene back to that person, I mean, that could be super beneficial, and I'd be all for looking into that. And back in 2017, Moderna was trying to do that, and they, quote, put it on indefinite delay because it never proved safe enough to test in humans. And I'm furthering this quote. Quote, mRNA is a tricky technology. Several major pharmaceutical companies have tried and abandoned the idea, struggling to get mRNA into cells without triggering nasty side effects. The indefinite delay on the Crigler-Najjar project signals persistent and troubling safety concerns for any mRNA treatments that needs to be delivered in multiple doses. That was from 2016. So my point in quoting these things is to say the burden of proof, the onus is on Moderna, on Pfizer, on the CDC, the FDA, these regulatory agencies, to prove safety, because this was the last word we have from them in 2018 to their investors. I'm sorry, we're abandoning this technology because we can't figure out a safe way to do it. And so let's remember that. We're framing the conversation. It's the onus is on these guys. And I also want to remind folks, the Pfizer rap sheet is long, to the tune of billions of dollars. They've been fined and found guilty by juries, by judges, criminal offenses. $45 million settlement in 2012. A $142.1 million jury found guilty for committing racketeering fraud. That's 2011, Pfizer. $430 million settlement for criminal charges in 2004, where Pfizer was bribing doctors. In the UK, Pfizer was fined $90 million by the NHS. And I could go on and on. I don't want to waste my time on that. My point is, be careful who we're talking about. Understand the history of who we're talking about, and that the onus is on these guys to prove safety before you put it on a childhood vaccine schedule or an adult vaccine schedule, much less mandated or anything else. Anyways, I'm going off on my soapbox, and we need to give our guests some time. So, Steve Kirsch, welcome to the program. Thank you for joining us today.
Thank you, Ben. It's good to be here again a year later.
Yes, sir. I'm sad. It saddens me. It's a year later that we're talking about this and how many people have died in that year. And I want to remind folks, you can go back and listen to that show, but the primary thing, I believe, Steve, that you initially started really focusing in on was what's called an underreporting factor. So, guys, I think everybody's familiar with VAERS now, Vaccine Adverse Event Reporting System, which I'll say prior to my waking up 10 years ago, I was trained at UT Houston Medical School, graduated 2002, was chief resident of my residency class. I mean, you know, fairly well trained. I'm not tooting my own horn here, but I'm saying I was trained in this great system, and I didn't even know about VAERS, much less know how to look for an adverse reaction besides an immediate, hey, you got a little hive, you know, you had a reaction at the injection site maybe, but even then I wasn't going to report it. I didn't know to report it. I wasn't trained to report it. I wasn't trained in adverse reactions at all. I didn't even know what was in these vaccines. They didn't teach me that. So what I'm saying is VAERS was really unknown to me, and I think most doctors prior to this, but this past couple years it's become more well known. And so the question was, okay, when a death is reported or an injury is reported on VAERS, say myocarditis, or say a heart attack, sudden death, for every one that's reported, how many go unreported? Is there two deaths for every one reported? Is there three deaths for every one that's reported? 10 deaths for every one that's reported? That's called the underreporting factor. And there's all kinds of different published studies out there using different methodologies to point to, you know, 3-1 or 5-1, up to 41-1. I've seen some up to 100 deaths or injuries per every one reported. So it's, you know, we don't know for sure, but we know it's not reported accurately. But even if it was, look at where we're at today. But anyways, that's, I believe, where Steve started looking into this. But the reason I had him come on today is because he's producing these Substack articles that is just producing mountains of evidence. There's a 52-slide deck that recently, a week or two ago, Steve, I think you're at the FLCCC conference in Florida and presented that. And so I don't know really my first question, but I guess my first question is, what's the number one thing you would tell parents, and really, honestly, pediatricians, other physicians that might be tuning in and listening and starting to wake up, what would be the one thing for those who are still on the fence that you would say, go look at? Go look at this before you decide to submit to that CDC childhood vaccine schedule, specifically the COVID shot.
It's probably the VAERS system. I mean, the VAERS is the official database used for tracking adverse events by the U.S. government. So you can't really get any better than that. That's the definitive source. And the FDA and CDC have been claiming that, oh, there are just a lot more reports in VAERS. In this case, about close to 15,000 deaths that have been reported into the VAERS system, which many people believe is underreported by at least a factor of 41 or more. And the problem is that they claim that this is just overreporting because people are now more aware of the VAERS system, such as yourself. But I actually did a survey of doctors and other healthcare professionals, and I found out that people were actually underreporting into VAERS by a factor of 51. So this suggests that the 15,000 deaths should be multiplied by a factor of 51, and you get a big number. well over 500,000 deaths associated with the COVID vaccines. Now, nobody wants to talk about that. Nobody at the CDC, nobody at the FDA. There's no doctor that wants to talk about it. No member of the mainstream media wants to talk about it. No fact checker wants to talk about it. Nobody wants to talk about it. It's unassailable. There are only really three explanations for the results in VAERS. Either it's fraud, it's overreporting, or the vaccines are unsafe. And nobody at all claims it's fraud. And the CDC has always claimed that it's overreporting, and they provide no evidence whatsoever to back up that claim. So I decided to test it out because I was pretty skeptical. And I found out that this year, the reports are actually being underreported compared to other VAERS reports by about a factor of five. So that suggests that in the past, VAERS has been 10x underreported, and this year it's 50x underreported, well within the range that has been published in various papers to date. So there's really no way that anyone can explain this. This is why I can't even get a debate with people like David Gorski, who pride themselves in being the debunkers of people who spread misinformation. So even the top debunker isn't touching this. And of course, the other big thing that they can't explain is that they have a formula for calculating the safety signal firing in the VAERS system, and that formula has been triggered, and yet nobody at the CDC realizes that it's been triggered, and the only way that can happen is because nobody at the CDC is actually looking at any of the safety data or looking at any of the safety signals. So that's troubling as well. Nobody can explain that. Nobody wants to go on camera to explain that. Nobody wants to address it. Nobody wants to talk about it. There's no mainstream media asking about it, even though it's been verified by multiple independent sources that the death safety signal in VAERS has triggered, which means the CDC should be alerting everyone. So those are probably the top two things.
Can you talk about, for those who haven't seen the headlines, and they haven't if they're watching and getting their news from standard sources, but the young doctors in Canada, I think the last report I saw was 80 doctors have died since these COVID shots were mandated. Can you speak to that any?
Sure. There has been, there's a doctor in Canada who's been tracking this, Dr. William Mackus, and he's found that there are 80 very suspicious deaths that happened in close proximity to the COVID vaccine in Canada for doctors. So he wrote a letter to the CMA, which is the Canadian Medical Authority, to ask them to investigate. They ignored him. Now, I don't know how you can be a medical association that is supposed to be supporting the health of doctors, and you get a letter like this, and you ignore it. I wish I had the reason that they would do that, but when I call them as a journalist and ask for comment, they don't return my calls. So we don't know why it's being ignored, but we can only assume the worst.
And I just looked up athletes too. And again, I know we have new folks tuning in all the time to this show, so we're not just preaching to the choir here. I had someone email me this weekend who was thanking me for standing for truth in this. They just started tuning in, and they're not going to take any more boosters. But I'm looking at goodsciencing.com, Scienceing, goodsciencing.com. 1,429 athlete cardiac arrest. Serious issues, 975 of them dead since the COVID injections were rolled out. Wildly elevated compared to the historical baseline on that. Have you looked into that any?
Yes, I have, but not in detail. I mean, this is happening in plain sight.
Yeah.
To normal people and to athletes especially. And nobody wants to touch the topic.
Can you talk about, it was a Substack article I saw, I forget the gentleman's name, Mr. Universe, Mr. America, I believe, Mr. Universe, and what happened with him?
Sure. His name was Doug Brignoli. He was a very famous bodybuilder, and he's been doing all sorts of stuff since he was 14, competing in contests and so forth. And he basically came out and said, "Hey, look, I've researched all of these vaccines, these COVID vaccines, and they're safe. And so I've decided to take it." And he said, "I will be the test case. If I die, you are right. And if I don't die, then you should retract all of your statements that the vaccines are unsafe and apologize to the American people." So he was recently vaccinated, apparently, and he died shortly thereafter. They're not talking about any of that. I reached out to someone who knows him very well, and she basically said that she couldn't talk about that, the association of the vaccine with his death, which pretty much tells you everything you need to know. Yeah. I mean, so here you have Doug Brignoli, Mr. Fitness, more or less, saying that, hey, if I die from the vaccine, everybody should pay attention, and all those people who said the vaccines weren't safe were right. So I think Doug sacrificed his life to send a message to the world that the vaccines are unsafe. Now, there's another guy, Joseph Kalman, and he is the inventor of the V-Safe system, which people use to report adverse events. It's kind of like a mini VAERS system. And he died 2 weeks after his second Pfizer shot. And it was claimed in the media that he died from COVID. But the problem is that he never had COVID. There were no reports in the media at all that he got COVID after getting his vaccine. He just died. So they conveniently placed the blame on COVID because, after all, what else could it be? And when I tried calling into his widow more than a year later, she wouldn't return my call. So, you know, people are not talking. Right? If he really died from COVID, then there's no harm in saying that. So we're going to get his death certificate and see what it says.
Well, and I was just remembering this was earlier, I think in August, Scottish mountain bike champion Rab Wardell, 37 years old. I mean, mountain biker, champion, fit as can be, and I think it was a day or two after he won another race, died in his sleep, cardiac arrest. We could spend the whole hour going through all the different, you know, young, healthy, and we kind of summarize it with those 1,400-plus cardiac arrests and healthy athletes. Can you talk a little bit about that, these athletes in particular? And I don't know if I read on your Substack or where I read this recently that a warning was given by someone to young people: after you get vaccinated, don't participate in intense athletic events for, I think it was a few days or something, because there's an increased risk of sudden cardiac death within a few days. But what is it in particular about young, healthy athletes that ask their hearts to work harder, like on a mountain bike ride, that could cause this? I know you've talked to Dr. McCullough and some other cardiologists, so thought maybe you had a thought on that.
Yeah, Dr. Cadigliani has some papers on this. It's his belief that it's due to the catecholamine release. which will happen then during intense activities. And so there's an interaction there. So that makes it particularly dangerous. But, you know, basically nobody should get these shots.
Yeah.
The shots overall kill about 50 people for every person that they might save. And that's being pretty conservative because I don't think that anybody's life is being saved by these shots at this point.
Yeah, there's definitely no data to support that's true. And even early on, I mean, the all-cause mortality from the very first Pfizer data that came out, there was more deaths in the vaccinated group, all-cause. Dr. Asim Malhotra, a cardiologist in the UK, academic cardiologist, well-known, published, initially was on TV in the UK promoting these shots. Unfortunately, his father, also another famous UK physician, died, and in Dr. Malhotra's opinion, it was directly due to the vaccine. So he came out and said, unless there's some very obvious cause, it's the vaccine until proven otherwise, which to me, that's a common sense kind of approach. I think Dr. McCullough's echoed the same sentiments. Until proven otherwise, we have to say this death, unexpected death, was from the vaccine. So he's come out pretty aggressively, and I think you had a chance to interview him, didn't you?
Oh, yes, I have. So we talk all the time. So, yeah, basically, Dr. Malhotra and Dr. McCullough are saying the same thing, that if you have an unexplained death and there's no evidence that you had underlying cardiac disease, then you should assume that it's the vaccine unless the vaccine has been ruled out. And the only real way to rule out the vaccine as a cause of death is to do a proper autopsy where the tissues are sent to a pathologist such as Dr. Ryan Cole to be stained and checked for involvement of the COVID-19 vaccine. Very few people do that. There are only about 25 people who have sent the tissue samples to Dr. Cole, and everyone that he's analyzed so far, the vaccine has been implicated in the death.
Yeah, I saw your interview with him, and he specifically talked about how he can tell if it's a spike protein from the vaccine versus spike protein from the actual infection from COVID, because there will be other proteins associated with the virus versus if it's just in the vaccine. So he is on the ball. And you would think, again, when the onus, the burden of proof would be on these agencies and drug companies to prove their drug is safe, that we'd be autopsying everybody. I mean, especially if they're young, especially if there's no other, reason for death. Why are not all the pathologists across the country doing this? Would be another red flag in my book.
Hard to explain what's motivating people, but I know if I had a loved one who passed away, I'd want to know what the cause was. But I haven't actually been able to get anybody to do the autopsy and send the tissue samples out to find out the truth. So it's as if nobody really wants to know the truth.
Yeah.
You know. So, for instance, Sean Kasten's daughter, Gwen, died shortly after getting the vaccine, and her death was very consistent to what Peter McCullough describes as how the vaccines kill young adults. And when Peter was describing it on a video that he did, I thought, wow, this is exactly how Gwen Kasten died. Mm. And yet, her father, Sean Kasten, the congressman, doesn't even consider the possibility, even the remotest chance, that his daughter was killed by the COVID vaccine. And they will not have her tissue samples sent to be analyzed because they don't want to know.
Yeah. It's awful. And she was 17 years old, I believe. And how many more 17-year-olds, 16-year-olds, 15-year-olds, and younger are going to die? And on the flip side of this, you know, if we were dealing with a very, very deadly virus, you know, maybe we can have a real, real good discussion about risk benefit there. And I saw this on your Substack also, John Ioannidis, Nobel Prize winner out of Stanford, he put the mean fatality rate for kids at 0.0003%. That would be 3 kids in 1,000,000 would die from COVID. And even that, I think, is maybe a little skewed because we have early treatment that's awesome, and a lot of doctors weren't and aren't using that. And then from other studies, we know that these kids really are highly immunocompromised. They have cancer, they're on chemotherapy, or they have some other significant medical issue. So basically, it's zero. for an otherwise healthy kid, especially with early treatment available. So where's the benefit? Why would you even put 1 or 2 or 10 or 15 or 20 or 100 or any kids up for death, you know, for no benefit? That's the thing that's, to me, the most egregious of the whole thing. And for the committee to vote 15 to 0, we're up against a break, and when we come back, I want to get your thoughts on this. I mean, 15 to 0, not even 1 or 2 or, you know, a handful of debate and people saying, oh, I just don't think so. Not for kids, not for an EUA authorized with no benefit. We don't even have 2 people vote nay. I mean, that's a red flag, but like I said, we're up against a break. Steve, if you can hang over for a few minutes. We are talking with Steve Kirsch and Substack, Substack, Substack.com, and lots of great folks on there writing truth, and you can just do on the search bar, Steve Kirsch, and I mean, I'm telling you, Steve, I don't know how you do it. It's like I can barely keep up. It seems like it's 2 or 3 or 5 articles a day coming out on your Substack. So appreciate all you're doing. But y'all go check that out. When we get back from the break, we're going to talk more with Steve about the CDC and their 15-0 vote. Hang tight. I'm Dr. Ben Edwards. You're the Cure.
Welcome back into You're the Cure with Dr. Ben Edwards, MD. Check out VeritasMedical.com for archive shows and other important information to help you regain control of your health. That's VeritasMedical.com.
All right, guys, thanks for joining back with us here. I forgot to announce at the top of the show, I'll be doing my first Tuesday talk. It's already first Tuesday coming up next week, November 1st. Usual location right next to the clinic. We'll be in our new building upstairs, 7 p.m., first Tuesday talk next Tuesday. So y'all come join us, or we'll be live streaming that also. Okay, we're with Steve Kirsch. Y'all go check out all the articles he's putting out. It's awesome stuff. Substack.com, Steve Kirsch. Steve, we were, before the break, I just want to get your comments on 15 to 0, putting this on the childhood schedule. What, when you saw that, and I know you put a billboard out right in front of the CDC building there in Atlanta, but what are your thoughts about that 15 to 0? Does that tell you anything?
Well, it wasn't a surprise at all. We expected it to be approved unanimously. Many of us wrote ahead of time that, yeah, this is going to happen. They're going to put it on the childhood schedule. It'll be a unanimous vote. And it's because nobody on these committees cares at all about safety. I tried to get the attention of the head of the ACIP committee, which is the head of the committee that voted, and ask her if she wanted to see the Israeli safety data showing that the vaccines actually aren't safe, and that actually proved that the vaccines are causing significant adverse side effects that appear not to go away. And so I try to ask her a yes-no question. Do you want to see the Israeli safety data, yes or no? Simple question. You want to see the safety data, yes or no? She wouldn't answer via email, so I texted her. She wouldn't answer via text. So I went to her office, and turns out she works at home, so I went to her home, knocked on her door. She didn't answer. So I waited 5 minutes, knock again, no answer. Wait another 5 minutes, knock again. So finally, after 20 minutes, I write a note and stick it on her door. And as I'm leaving, I meet 2 cops from the Palo Alto police. And they ask me questions like, you know, what's your name, why are you here, you ever talked to her before, what's that note on the door? They looked at the note. The note said, hey, just trying to ask you a question. And so they said, hey, you know, you've done nothing wrong. There's no violation here that the police should have been called. And you're free to go. So I left, and as I left, the cops handed her the note that was on the door. So I have proof of service. I have proof that she knows that she's been been offered the Israeli safety data, and she refuses to look at it. So when you have, and this is the chair of the committee. This isn't just a committee member. This is the chair of the committee. The buck stops there. The most important person on that committee basically says, look, not only do I not want to look at the safety data, I don't even want to answer the question as to whether I want to look at the safety question. So by calling the cops, I avoid having to answer the question.
Unbelievable.
That's how bad it is. And all of these people are just like that. They don't care about the safety data, and they don't care that there's no problem here. Right? I mean, I looked at the death data from Massachusetts, and there was only one person in the 2 years that I looked at that was claimed to be a COVID death. So I contacted the parents, and I found out that the child died from a congenital heart disease. So you have Massachusetts where in peak COVID, there are no deaths of kids. Like, so what problem are we trying to solve here? So there's no emergency. There's not even a problem. And yet, and they don't want to look at any of the safety data. And that's how it's done. This is how science is done in America, and everybody trusts it. The doctors trust it. The mainstream media trusts it. So it's only large handful, hundreds of people such as myself who are speaking out about these vaccines. And, you know, it's probably tens of thousands when you look into the, or even maybe hundreds of thousands when you look at all the tweets and so forth on Twitter of people who are saying, yeah, it was the shot. In Australia, it's only, I think it was less than a third of the people are continuing to get the shots. Then the rest basically are not going to get any more shots in Australia. And in Israel, we know that the numbers are only 2.4% of the population are considered to be fully vaccinated today. So they're not buying the Kool-Aid either.
Well, there's some silver lining. Tell us a little more. I mean, obviously with the head of the ASIP committee, but you've tried to contact, if I recall right, you know, local and state and national politicians, deans of universities, medical schools. Can you talk a little bit about that? And has anyone received your phone calls or your tried to answer any of your questions?
Nobody will. I've tried. In fact, I was at a birthday party yesterday, and one of the attendees is a full professor of medicine at Stanford University. And we've known each other for a long time, and I said, hey, can I interview you on the vaccines? Because obviously we have, you know, different point of view here on the safety of the vaccines. And she said, sure, you know, I'm a little bit busy right now, but we could set something up. And I'm going like, wow, well, this is, like, I've been trying to do this for 18 months, and this is the first time somebody said that they'll talk to me. So I sent her an email saying, hey, you know, just give me a time and let's do it. And she says, well, I really want to know, like, what's this about and what's it going to be used for? And I said, hey, you know, we just want to have a discussion. We obviously disagree. Let's see if we can iron out the differences. And here are a few documents that are out. You know, because she asked, well, what specifically do you want to talk about? So I said, hey, you know, here's, I'm pointing to one of my Substack articles. And she says, well, I really don't think it's a good idea to have this discussion. Thanks anyway. And that's it.
Unbelievable. Well, in one of your recent articles, you actually said Stanford professors are asking doctors to give misinformation. I think if I'm recalling that right. Stanford tells doctors to give false information in order to overcome vaccine hesitancy. That was October 21st article you put out. Can you, what are you talking about there?
Yeah, so there is a Stanford course for doctors to instruct them for how to deal with vaccine hesitancy. And so I listened to the course. I was really curious as to how they would convince me to take the vaccine. And they basically said, hey, for people who are against the vaccine, it could take many sessions to convince these people that the vaccines are safe and effective. So that was nice. But you see, there's the assumption here that the people who created the course are correct and that everybody who the doctor would talk to is wrong. And so it's always about the doctor trying to convince the patient that the patient is wrong rather than instructing the doctor, hey, you should listen to the patient. Maybe the patient might be right. You know, maybe we could be wrong. So it's not really a fair conversation to have, but I'm listening to some of the things where they're doing this role play where the doctors are saying, and now, you know, point out that the rates of myocarditis are actually higher for the disease than for the vaccine. And that's simply not true at all. And so there were other statements like that that are basically completely false. And so this is what's in the course. So they're teaching people effectively to spread misinformation about the vaccine in order to convince them to take the vaccine.
Yeah. Well, and it's the same thing happening here. The Texas Medical Association, which is the state version of the AMA here in Texas, I get emails from them routinely. And I received an email September 28, 2022. And the title of the email said, "Upcoming flu season. Vaccine hesitancy could intensify as side effects of pandemic." And they go on to quote an infectious disease specialist in San Antonio, Dr. Charles Lerner, quote, "It's a lot safer to get the vaccine than not," he said, "of both the flu and the COVID-19 shots. It's like wearing seat belts." I mean, it was this basic, superficial, you know, I would say even propaganda. I mean, there's no one's addressing the actual questions, and probably even worse than that, there was a second email that the title of this email was "Talk to Patients About Messenger RNA Vaccines." And it was basically this email to all these doctors that subscribe to TMA. COVID-19 has made messenger RNA the hottest new technology in vaccines. And it goes on in the body of the email to go through the top three questions that you might get from your patients. And here's how you would address them. And the first question was, were the mRNA, the messenger RNA vaccines made too quickly to be safe? And then it gives the answer you're supposed to give your patient. And the next question, can the mRNA vaccine give you COVID? Does the mRNA change your DNA? Can the mRNA vaccines cause infertility? These were the hot topic questions that your patients might come into the office with, and here's the answers you're supposed to give them. It was just unbelievable. The answers that they put on there, I mean, not even addressing any of the actual data. I mean, I should have written back and said, guys, my patients come in with actual studies in hand on fertility and on the reverse transcription of the mRNA into DNA in the Petri dish. So couldn't that happen in your actual liver cell in the body? But this is the kind of thing doctors are getting in their email inbox to basically toe the company line and not have independent critical thinking. And therefore, you have doctors that just don't know, unfortunately. I mean, I applaud you, Steve, for what you're doing, because I point folks to your Substack all the time who truly are interested in the truth. And I think that's a problem. They start counting the cost of, wait a minute, for me to admit I was wrong, that could cost me a lot. And it could cost me my job if I'm in a hospital system or clinic system where the administration basically sets the policy and I have to abide by it and keep my mouth shut otherwise. That's, I mean, kind of where we're at, unfortunately. Do you have thoughts on these doctors and not standing up to the what seems to be obvious if you go look at the data? Why do you think they're not?
Well, there are a couple of classes of doctors for why they're not looking at the data. So one is the doctor that simply just doesn't have the time and trust the health authorities and trust the CDC and trust the FDA and doesn't have time to look at the data themselves. Now, Dr. Malhotra was in that category. He basically trusted his peers and the authorities, and so is Dr. Paul Merrick. And so, you know, you can't fault these guys, and not everybody can check everything out. So they assumed they were being told the truth. And so it's only when there's an event that happens in their lives that they start to question what they were told. And basically this is a sort of a discontinuity that, you know, hey, that's a little weird. That's not consistent with what I was told. And that gets them to look at the data directly. So in Dr. Malhotra's case, his father died 6 months after he got the COVID vaccine, and he had occlusions in several of his arteries. And Dr. Malhotra said, well, that's strange, because I'm a cardiologist and I know my dad, and he has clear arteries, so how could they be all of a sudden closed off and killed him? And so he started looking at the data firsthand and realized that he had been completely hoodwinked. And, you know, other doctors, Paul Merrick, for example, you know, he believed his peers and he got the shot, just like I'm sure Dr. Malhotra got the shot. And so Dr. Merrick then started running into these people who were vaccine injured. Now, how could you have vaccine injured with a safe and effective vaccine? I mean, it didn't make any sense. So Dr. Merrick started looking at the data, and he was appalled. And so he switched from being pro-vaccine to being anti-vaccine when he looked at the data. And so the thing that these people have in common is that they were all basing their initial assessments on trusting what they were told. And then as soon as they started seeing data that was not consistent with what they were told, they started looking directly at the data in its entirety. And then it was very clear that they had been misled, and that these people who were misleading them were probably misled by other people. So there's some people who then, when they find that out, will basically just keep their mouth shut because they want to keep their job. So I know there's a doctor at Stanford who let my wife know that I'm not a whack job. And she said, don't tell him who I am, but your husband's telling the truth, and I'm seeing this in my practice. But I'm not allowed to say anything, because if I did, I'd be fired. And I'm the sole breadwinner in my family, and I can't afford to lose my job. So that's why it's important that you not tell anyone who I am. But I just wanted to let you know that your husband is telling the truth, and it's unfortunate, but as physicians, we are not allowed to tell the truth to patients to save their lives. We have to toe the line and do what we're told. And so I have to tell patients that these vaccines are safe and effective and that they should get vaccinated. Otherwise, I will lose my job. So so there are those people who realize what's going on and are conflicted. And, of course, there are other people who realize what's going on and have decided to speak out and are sacrificing their careers to do that. I mean, Dr. Merrick essentially got fired for speaking out about what's going on. And, you know, so did Dr. Corey and Dr. McCullough and other people are basically, you know, switching, have to switch careers in order to be truth tellers.
It's really sad that that's where we're at, but it is. We got to wrap it up here. I just want to say, probably last thing here, Steve, is I noticed you interviewed Dr. Ryan Cole, the pathologist who is doing spike protein analysis on these autopsies tissues. But then in a separate article you wrote about, I think you asked them, how do you lose visceral fat? And Dr. Ryan Cole just spouted off a few things, and it's the exact things we preach here on how to be healthy, really. And to see you gravitate that way to these deeper things of health. And Dr. Paul Merrick, just today I saw, I think it was over the weekend, it was a quote, he lost 40 pounds because he decided to take control of his life, look at really what causes fat gain, obesity, but seeing more of these guys turn to the truth across the board, not just with COVID, but with health in general. And so there is that positive silver lining. People are looking, taking a hard second look at this pharmaceutical-driven, quote-unquote, healthcare, which is sick care management industry, and taking self-responsibility and getting healthy. So great job, I want to say. Kudos to you. I mean, we haven't talked about that, but just based off the article or that interview with Ryan Cole, it looks like you've really taken your health into your own hands.
Certainly my eyes have been opened from this experience.
Yeah. Well, thank you again for all you're doing. It takes a big man to be able to find the truth, dig for the truth, spread the truth despite everyone that's coming against you and not answering their door and calling the cops on you. Unbelievable. So thank you. Everybody check out Substack.com, Steve Kirsch's site. If you want to encourage your neighbor, your coworker, your family member who is open to hearing the truth or who starts asking you questions or in any way wanting to really see what's going on, that would be a great place to start. As you can see from our conversation today, Steve goes all over the place with all kinds of different sources and data and researchers, and it's there. The data's there, and he's compiled a lot of it for you. So thank you again, Steve, for joining us today. Appreciate all your efforts.
Thanks, Ben. It's a pleasure to be here. The URL, by the way, is stevekirsch.substack.com.
Okay. Y'all go check that out. Wade, thanks again for hosting some freedom of speech here on the radio.
Absolutely. Well, we appreciate that so much. And have a wonderful rest of your week, fellas. Thanks so much for being on the radio program today. And you have been listening to You're the Cure with Dr. Ben Edwards, MD. Check out Veritas Medical for archive shows and other important information to help you regain control of your health. We'll have the show up there at Veritas Medical, all one word, .com.